extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Stefano Fusaro. Playoff time, it is here. Wild card games, come and gone. New York Red Bulls, Sporting Kansas City. Chalk.
Wild card.
Chalk. I don't know, I was on sports radio in St. Louis the other day, and they even welcomed me onto the phone on hold in sports radio voice, and it was incredible.
How big an experience was that for you?
It was fun. Yeah. Threw a couple Jayhawks jabs in there, a little 1985 work for him, gave it to him, gave him the good stuff. Yeah, it was good.
The deep cut.
But when they called, it's like off air, you know, they're like, hey, yeah, we're going to be on hold. But it was more like, hey, Andrew Wiebe, you're on hold. And I was like, whoa, this is about to be crazy. And so is that series. First round is here. How are we feeling? Good? Playoff energy?
Yeah, I was in the building for Red Bulls.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I went to a playoff game. So
you were witness.
Spoilers.
You were witnessed by someone, a friend of a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah. You sent witnessed that message.
You, yeah, witnessed you on the PATH train, but was too intimidated.
Wow.
Listen, say hello.
It's an intimidating guy.
I give off a lot of energy. Yeah. Especially when I'm on the path. Like I'm on the path, you know?
Right.
So I'm already at my peak.
What's your rest face? You know, some people might have a certain adjective in there. Is it like a
David,
welcoming face or is it a
David a decade? He does not have a rest face.
That's true. No, good point. Good
there
point.
Is no rest.
I was with Ben Bear, so I was annoyed about something that I didn't understand.
Now we know why that person did
is
not
he,
come
why
up
is David
that.
So mad? I can't go talk to him right
ben
now.
Ben basically made me think the Knicks won. During the game, he was watching on his phone in the row behind me, and he hits me. He's like, Knicks up six.
Who were they playing?
Some provincial
Knicks
team.
Knicks and Celtics fans on this desk with me. Gosh.
See you tonight, buddy.
Oh, God.
See you tonight.
Yeah, I know.
Said
one...
the Pat Riley fan. You're complaining?
Celtics fans.
No,
I
agree.
I know one guy on this set that likes the expanded wild card. He's got experience with it. His Heat made a run with it. Mm-hmm. Right? Stefano Fusaro, all about that expanded MLS Cup playoff format. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. So we're into the first round. It's a best of three series, 90 minutes straight to PKs. You win two games. By any means, you move on. So I know that is a change for some people. We'll go through some pros and cons and just talk through how we think it might shake out. Big dunk. Orlando runs on Duncan. We've got free mugs thanks to Duncan McGuire in Orlando, and Duncan is going to join us here on the show to help preview Orlando-Nashville, one of the more fascinating rounds in this first round. Let's jump right in, though. We've got first round games on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday. You know where to watch them. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Pre-game coverage. Wrap-up is post-game, so all the highlights, all the previews the next day, every single thing you need. And, of course, we will be here, though, on a slightly strange schedule. We are going to record, of course, today, this Friday. But then we're off a whole week, basically, to let all of the first round games pass. We'll come back and do a full review and a look ahead next Friday. So,
full disclosure, Wiebe is refusing to do two shows a week. Mm-hmm. He's gotten into a holiday vacation schedule. Yeah. So we actually
Wiebe's on every show from the studio.
If full disclosure,
if you don't like
vacation.
Me, you might not like the coverage. I'm not gonna lie to you about that. Not gonna lie. I'll see y'all weekend, folks. What's up? No, we're in it's contentious negotiations with producer Anders. He says two, I say one.
Yeah.
Neither of us actually has a choice because the studio schedule we don't set. So we'll see you on Friday. Best things we saw, wild card round, straight into the soccer. Doyle, what do you got?
Alan Pulido's ridiculous penalty kick in Sporting KC's eventual win over the San Jose Earthquakes in that Western Conference 8-9 game. He walked up, and look, I think once it went to penalties, we all knew who was going to win. And this is no disrespect to Daniel, who is probably going to finish second in goalkeeper of the year. Should finish second in goalkeeper.
I don't think he's a finalist, Doyle.
Is he not?
I would have to look again.
Well,
but
that's absurd. Daniel has been the best shot stopper in MLS this year. He is a foundational piece for this Quakes team and should be for the next half decade. But you don't get involved in a land war in Asia, and you never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line, and you do not go up against Tim Melia in penalties. So no matter what happened with the Sporting KC shooters, we knew who was going to advance in this game. So when Alan Pulido put on his clown costume and stepped up to take that penalty. It's like literally one of the worst penalties I've ever seen in my entire life.
Hold on. Let's just try to give Alan the benefit of the doubt here, because it looked sort of like his knee buckled on him. Mm-hmm. So maybe this was...
He was very...
This was physiological. This was
there's
less...
a sucker in every room.
He was very clearly...
Right after he honked his nose, his knee just gave out.
Just gave out.
He was very clearly trying to send Daniel... the wrong way, and Daniel was not biting. He was just holding his spot until eventually Pulido takes a very strange looking step, almost comes to a stop, and finally Daniel sort of dives to his right, and Pulido hits like squibs it down the middle.
He fell down.
It was also a courtesy dive by Daniel, right? Like, it was like, oh, let me go down and make it not look as bad as it was, and then the worst is Pulido.
It was
afterwards.
So good. And like, I was sitting next to producer Maria during that penalty and like the shrieking from her.
That's great.
And the pure joy that moment brought to everyone except Sporting KC fans. I mean, we all love the playoffs for different reasons and various reasons. This is one of them for me.
Now, the good news for Alan Pulido is that, again, he has Tim Melia, who is now 7-0 in penalty kick shootouts, is the best penalty stopper in the history of Major League Soccer.
Better than Matt Turner, better than Nick Raimondo,
period.
Than George Pettis.
There's just no debate about it. He is that guy. I thought it was fascinating that Lucho Gonzalez chose Espinoza and Ewell to be his first two takers, because of those six prior wins in PK shootouts, one was in 2020 in Kansas City against the Quakes, and Espinoza and Ewell both either had their penalties saved or missed, and Espinoza took a pretty poor one, and Ewell... skied it. Like, the mind game loss there for those two, that was tough.
Lucci also took out Jeremy Abobase.
Yeah.
With 5 minutes or more than
77th
that.
Minute.
Yeah, 77th minute when you're playing for a smash and grab. Look, the Quakes, full credit to San Jose for even making the playoffs this year. I think that is a tangible step forward. I know they increased attendance by 20%. I think the turnstile count was over 35%. So they're doing great things there. It was a weird year watching this team fail to create the types of chances that had been the one silver lining that we saw from them last year. And it didn't leave me feeling good about San Jose heading into next season.
On the PK thing, though, Espinoza's their MVP.
Yeah, I know. He's
Jackson Ewell's like the most experienced player on the team.
I guess to me,
they
just
say they want to shoot. They're shooting. And no, I know. Shooting one and two.
I just felt like every time Tim Melia's there, it doesn't matter what role you have, how highly you think of yourself. I think he has a mental edge, probably.
Maybe.
But I guess we'll see, right? Could get three straight shootouts against St. Louis.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
I mean, like, it won't be three straight shootouts, because if it goes to shootout in the first two, there's not going to be a game three. It's going to be blue hell.
Oh, you're saying Tim Miller is going to win 100% of the time.
I did. Yeah. I didn't understand. Allie Trost tweeted out, she had looked up Roman Berkey's, I think his PK saving percentage, and I want to say he was like 0 for 24. At least that's what FB Ref shot back. I'll confirm that when we preview that match. We'll preview all eight of the first round matchups. But yeah, Tim Miller is that guy. He is that guy. All right, Steph, what do you got? Best thing you saw.
There's no Lionel Messi in the playoffs, but John Tolkien went full Leo Messi in that,
same player.
In that wildcard round. Absolute banger of a goal. This guy just continues to produce and continues to score goals from left back. Obviously, this was a free kick, but from the left back position, have been the most impactful player for the Red Bulls. He showed up in the wildcard game in front of that crowd, and he scores to score that type of a banger in front of that crowd in a wildcard game. It's just a huge moment for him, and I think he's continuing to shine. Friend of the show, good guy. It's good to see him have that kind of success.
If Messi grew up in Chatham, how good would he be? Like, double, triple?
His game would be wild.
Yeah.
But like,
pure jersey?
Tolkien stepped up, because I think he had the assist on Manuel's first goal. Yes. And it was, he scored, and then just Manuel scores, and then Tolkien just spins around and runs into the crowd like a crazy person. And you're like, John Tolkien's on one right now. Like, he scored the penalty. He's back at home. He's in jersey. The blood's flowing. And then he stepped up to the free kick, and I said out loud, there's no chance. And then he curls it. And I was sitting right behind the other goal, so I had the perfect view to watch it go up and over. Guy's just loving life right now.
He really is. And you see him, and you see him kind of being like taking, like listening to the haters, if you will, if that's what you want to call them. But he's clearly had that like as motivation now, where he's like, every interview he's done, he's like, keep counting us out. Keep counting us out. And that's so Jersey of
him.
Yeah,
it's so
like,
Jersey.
It's so great to see that.
I would add, I think, motivation as well. I'm not reporting anything. I'm just guessing. This is probably it in his Red Bull career. Like, he's playing this well. He will play with national teams and youth national teams over the next time. Maybe he will start next year. I'd be shocked if he was in Major League Soccer next playoffs. So it feels like this is his opportunity. And I think you asked if he was a club legend after the PK. He is now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and we were talking before the show about what does this moment match in terms of Red Bull playoff game production. Not the biggest games, not the most important games, but like that dominant in a playoff game. And the only one we could come up with to compare was at Chicago Fire in 2016, I believe it was. 17. And it was Tyler Adams who sort of put that show on where they beat Bastian Schweinsteiger and Dax McCarty and all of them. This feels like John Tolkien's version of that.
To be fair, the Red Bulls, you're not going to find a big game or a massive stakes game where it's a good memory in the playoffs.
It's so true. Couldn't give them 20.
I'm just
hours
saying. It's like eliminates a lot of options for you. So congratulations to John Tolkien. Alas, Manuel jumping the shark has to be the best thing I saw in the wild card round. This is a so inside baseball stupid. You've been on X way too long / Twitter. But our guy, Callum Williams, tweeted out the morning of this wild card game that he was in Brooklyn dropping his kid off for daycare. And he overheard a conversation between a couple kids about the best way to use Alas, Manuel. And the first thing that jumped into my mind was, not one, is this real?
Yeah. Sorry, wait, let's just stop. Love Callum, like, we all love you, man. We do not. Nobody at this table believes you. Nobody at this table believes.
I want to.
That
I want
happened.
To.
We all desperately want to.
Yeah. First, is this real? And second, who would be talking about Elias Manuel's role? Like, probably not playing. The dude has 3 goals all season long. He scores 3 in one game.
But the kids knew. The kids, Charlotte, man. He loved. Is 6 goals against Charlotte?
Yeah, it is 6 of his 9. In Major League Soccer.
Kids knew, man.
He kills Charlotte.
They were in the Anders research booklet in the morning being like, what am I going to talk about today?
They got the research packet that we all
exactly.
Well, Charlotte's a little bit naive in transition moments, and if this Red Bulls team wins all the second balls and goes direct.
I'm just going to say this. If you are a teenager who wears your Red Bull outfit to a coffee shop in Brooklyn and speaks and debates loudly with your friends about Elias Manuel and his role with the team, you're also probably an extra time listener. If that was you having that conversation that Callum Williams overheard.
Wait, time out. Did I misread the tweet? I thought the kids at the nursery were talking about it.
No. That would have been so much better.
Was it a coffee shop on the way to the nursery?
I think it was a coffee shop.
I mean,
I thought it was like 4-year-olds.
The 4-year-olds
like, moving around their blocks on the carpet. Thought, like, if he occupies this space,
I thought they took the graham cracker, they ripped it in half, and they were like, you have your center backs right here.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
anyway,
man.
If that was you, please hit the extra time mailbag. You know, please
DM me. Get straight in the
DM to Andrew Wiebe because we have to.
We must confirm.
This could be a running bit throughout the play. We have to figure out what else you guys are prescient about.
And if you overhear anyone talking about potential tactics, breakout players, or predictive results anywhere in the world when it comes to MLS, right into the DMs. Tell me the story. I need to know it. Just an incredible moment for the Red Bulls. I mean, I did the math on their last 4 games. It's 11 goals all season long. We've sort of, you know, to be fair to John Tolkien, he's like, hey, the haters who said we couldn't do it, who don't like to watch us, like, kind of will raise my hand on that one, to be honest with you. 27% of their goals have come in the last 4 games over the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
27%. It's nutty.
Yeah.
It's out of character.
They turn
completely
every game into a Red Bull game, right? Go watch the film this year. No matter who they were playing, they play in Columbus, they could be playing Cincinnati, they could play LA, it doesn't matter. 90% of their games, they controlled how the game played out, right? They're very good at imposing their style. And it's just a question of, you know, are they going to finish the chances that they create off of that? And against Charlotte, with some help from Christian Kalina, who, by the way, you guys love that free kick, like, I... got several texts from goalkeepers being like, why didn't he use his top hand? I think he saves.
Why are you texting with goalkeepers? That's already the mistake.
That's
gross.
I was getting coffee this morning. And
fair
then
point. Like, Kalina.
Goalkeepers, we're talking,
we're talking to you.
Kalina has to use his top. But anyway, the Red Bulls are always going to create chances. They, in the first half, they scored three goals on like 0.2 expected goals. It's been the complete opposite all year long.
To be fair to the 0.2 expected goals, I mean, Charlotte, how naive can you be going into a game against the Red Bulls? How naive can you be?
All three were off of lost midfield possessions, right? The first one, they're trying to play out of the back, and it ends up being head tennis, and Edelman wins the ball and like loops it into the box.
Not even loops it. It's a direct ball straight over the heads of the
center. But at the same time, Enzo Capetti was in on goal to make it 1-1.
Yeah.
Like, you paid him how much money? That's the point of the team, right? Like, it could have been 1-1. That changes the momentum. That changes the game. Not saying Charlotte was in it or had chances until Patrick Osimhen came on, obviously, which is a bigger problem for them. But, like, they had a DP striker in on goal who slows up, lets the defender back in play, kills his own angle to make it 1-1 in a playoff game in which you're talking about a team that doesn't score a lot of goals.
Agreed,
normally.
Agreed. But this is, I mean, it was a continuation of all the things that have played Charlotte all year long. Like, okay, we give the ball away badly in midfield.
Yep.
And then we have bad shape behind it, and we're outnumbered in central midfield almost every single time. It was the same in this game. If you thought Bronico and Westwood were going to win that battle, that's insanity.
Just Bronico and Westwood. It's the tucking in fullback. Like
that was the third goal. Nathan Byrne is tucked in. Capetti loses it.
And like, look, Milanda is defending a 1v2 up the left side, and like, Tolkien does really nice work, you know, getting him to commit and a little hesitation, and just slips it into Elias Manuel. He has 10 yards of room in the box. Like, it was really bad for
me. So Charlotte finished last year 9th place in the Eastern Conference on 42 points. They finished this year 9th place in the Eastern Conference on 43 points. But they made the playoffs.
Well, and last year, remember, they fired a coach and were terrible to start the season, and that's why the coach got fired.
Yeah, it's funny how sports work, because I think this is a step forward, but they literally got one more point than last year.
It is, and they inched forward.
They rolled over and are now further along than they
stepped up. They took a step up the hill, fell down, rolled two back.
I will say that I think you'll want to, if you're a Charlotte fan, you'll want to put Tom's Twitter feed on your messages. You want to get alerts from Tom Bogert this offseason.
I never want to get alerts from Tom Bogert. It is unhinged.
I'd say the only alerts I ever get from Tom Bogert are like videos of him to the group chat, like looking into the camera, then pounding a beer and dropping it. Yeah. That's it.
I thought the group chat was Sanctum, man.
Oh, he does that. It's on only when Weeby sends stuff. Oh, he receives things.
No. You can say whatever I say in there, mostly. Sometimes. not
all of as them. He brings it up to find what Weeby has said.
And I will go ahead and go in and delete everything that I've ever said about that group chat.
Bangers this morning.
First round. First round format. I don't know what you're talking about. Pros and cons. We got to jump through this.
Let's see what you said in the group chat.
Yeah, I don't even. The sad thing is, I don't remember. I don't remember. So this could be anything. Three games in the first round. It's the only round of that nature. It will be single elimination, just like MLS playoffs past, once we get the conference semifinals, finals, and MLS Cup. No extra time. I personally thank the soccer gods for that. Yeah, that's a good point. No, yeah, he's pointing at the sign behind me that says extra time. To be fair,
no brand. Brand awareness.
Open your third eye. They're cutting one of our shows per week, and there's no extra time in the first round.
Or without extra time, technically, the whole game is extra time.
I was going to say it's better without extra time in the first round, but now I'm really just walking myself down a dark alley here. What are the pros? Let's start with the pros.
I've said since the beginning of the year, I think one of the pros will be that teams that are willing to open up and play will have more freedom to do that, because there is more space, right? Like, space as in game time. Often we've seen in the playoffs, team gives up a goal in the first 5 minutes against the run of play, and then the game states shift and it's one game elimination. I have leaned on Columbus and I think Houston as the two teams where maybe in the past they wouldn't play their soccer in the playoffs because it doesn't work in single elimination. And now I think we're going to get to see those teams come out and play the way they want to play, because mistakes are not as big. You have space, you have time to make up deficits. And on top of that, no goal differential. No
aggregate. Yeah.
So, like, if you're losing, let it rip and go and try and come back. Yeah. There's no like, we're only down 2-1. Let's hold it. Yeah. So I think there's actually, I think it's going to be a little bit freer, and yet they are, every game still matters. Just, it's not like it's a 14 game series. You lose a game, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you lose,
a game, you're, everything's an elimination.
Yeah, the next, 100%.
Yeah, but then the next game, you start back at zero. You don't have to worry about it. It's a brand new game where you can see good soccer. Like you said, right? Where teams can come out and be free because they know that it doesn't matter what happened. If we lost 4-0 in the first game, it doesn't matter because this game you can come out, you win 1-0, it's just a win. So I think that's a pro.
And sure. I think if you asked Wilfried Nansen, I'm sure someone will, he will say our style will work over 3 games. And so, like, you take the risk of opening up and allowing chances to the other team because you're going to create chances to your own team. Because the belief is, over the course of a full season, which 3 games is closer to that than 1 game, it comes good.
So there's a lot of debate going on around this. And I think you have to go back to previous.
Everyone's talking about it.
Everyone's yelling at everyone else on Twitter. Tweets. Yeah, I've been tweeting some people into the void.
I just don't want to get hit by the lightning, so can you keep the rod on
that
side?
There are a couple things you have to measure this against, because there have been playoff changes in the past in Major League Soccer, and let's be fair, that's true for every major sport in the U.S. I mean, there's a new wild card team in the NFL. I don't see anybody complaining about that one. But, you know, back in the days of the 2-game series, when you were away first as the higher seed, that always felt back-asswards. Like, that felt wrong, because away teams were, now you're the best team, you're at a disadvantage. You can go finish at home, but you have the aggregate to worry about, and that caused the best teams in the league, I thought, to have to drift away from their style of play, to play in a little bit of a shell, to be risk averse because you couldn't afford to lose big away to start the series. This should change that. But if we're going to switch and like examine a con, perhaps, Doyle, there could be a con that maybe away teams that aren't as good, like the Red Bulls, for instance, just say, we're going to play for the draw because if we get to penalty kicks, we have a chance to win in a non-traditional quote-unquote way and take an advantage from that.
So we know the Red Bulls won't do that. That's not the, like, it's, I think Nashville is the right example of that.
Wouldn't they probably do something similar to that anyway? Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
You gotta love Weeby ripping his own argument apart right as you get to it.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the argument for it is, like, you get more games that matter, right? You get at least 2 instead of just 1. The argument against it is, I think that single elimination knockout round tournament was perfect. I thought that the playoffs the last couple of years have been so good. So good. So there's a lot riding on these first rounds of game. I'm curious to see what happens. I do think that teams, you know, a number of road teams will come out and play to get to PKs. You know, play for a smash and grab. Not that they wouldn't have done that in the past.
I mean, RSL 2020, right?
Yeah.
I think it's 2019 when they didn't take a shot.
I thought it was, I'm pretty sure it was 21.
It definitely wasn't 19.
21. It was 21. You're right.
Yeah. So it has happened. But again, like the playoffs the past few years have been incredible. They've been so good. And so if it feels less good this year, I think a lot of people will point to the format change.
I do like the scheduling of it.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I was a little bit antsy about with the previous format last year is I just felt like those weeks in between games were so long. And I understand from a fan's point of view, being in stadium, being able to build your life around it, going to the games, you want to be there. You've been all there season long. To be there is the best possible thing, to watch your team have that one moment and know it's all on the line. But like Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday. So what, out of 5 days, 4 of those days, I get to watch MLS Cup playoff games?
And standalone, right? Like if you build up, you watch that game, you enjoy that game. 2 a night, I think, is perfect. It's not a lot of times.
There's no overlap.
It's great, but it's like a weekend where it's 8 games in the weekend, and then it's over, as you said, for a number of days. No, I think it's going to feel like what we're used to with an MLB we just saw in NBA.
Right, exactly. That's what it's going to be similar to all those other sports that fans like love to watch. Basketball playoffs, hockey playoffs, where it's every single night there's action. I think that's only it's only a positive, right? I mean, we're gonna get to watch games every single night. That's great.
That's sicko behavior.
That's what we are here.
Playoffs are, baby.
Yeah, no,
now's the time of year for it.
I also think, from a strictly competitive point of view, I understand being a little bit confused or frustrated or just thinking, hey, why? Why are the formats different? The wild card was different than the first round, which is different than the semis, the final, and cup. I truly understand that. The flip side of it is, I think this is the time to ideally reward the top seeds And I'm not saying I want the lower seeds to lose, but I would prefer a competitive format that rewards better teams who are better for longer.
Wait, you don't think
in the regular season?
You don't think this format is going to get the better teams are not going to go through more?
I think they will.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's a positive.
Yes. Okay. I didn't know
where
you're going. I agree with you.
I got to workshop. I got to workshop my argument.
Well, you got to be more entertaining than what I'm doing on my computer.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right. I don't think anything else to empty on that tank, or we feel good about it.
Year one is always interesting. You'll see me. You might see someone have a harebrained idea, and I think there might be a coach or two that say, "Oh, we're going to do something completely different in one game to the other, or a lineup change, or not travel a player to." You know, like, we don't know yet, and I think we all speak to enough clubs where there's someone at each club with a ridiculous idea that they're putting out there, and everyone's shooting down, and there'll be one club that doesn't shoot it down, and that's something we don't expect.
Maybe. Look, the other thing that you have to throw in here, we had the Tim Mealy discussion. Having a penalty stopper is a pretty big weapon.
Yeah.
In a first round like this. And I think of Elliott Panico in Nashville in that same sense. Having penalty experience is pretty important, and a bunch of teams got it.
You're saying they made this format so John McCarthy could get more minutes?
I mean,
although Max just saved two Ryan Gauld penalties.
Well, to be fair, Ryan Gauld put one off the post.
Oh, so, fair. Yeah. But he saved one.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. First round. We are ranking these and going in order of our own personal entertainment. And number one is St. Louis Sporting Kansas City. Rivalry in the first round. First ever playoff match at City Park against, I mean, it is cross-state, though the stadium's in Kansas. It ultimately is cross-state. I-70 bridging the two. This has been a rivalry in sports and in just like citydom for a long, long time. Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, so 9 p.m. Central on MLS Season Pass. St. Louis hosting Sporting Kansas City.
Forgets about other times.
I always do the math wrong on Eastern time to Central time.
It's a tougher one because it's 1 hour. Yeah, it's just really tough.
You always assume it's two. It really trips you up. Has for a long time for me.
What do you, as the
resident,
as the local, what do you make of what Sunday night will be like and sort of what the vibe around the Kansas-Missouri area will be over the course of the week?
That stadium is going to be on fire.
I think it's going to be unhinged.
Like I can't wait to see how many away tickets get allocated to Kansas City and then how many Kansas City fans somehow, I would assume, pay an awful lot of money to get in. That split will be very interesting, and I can't help but think about 85, and I know St. Louis fans who live that long are thinking about 85 as well, and that series in baseball and what it meant, and also just there is just a rivalry between the two cities, whether it be around college sports or around professional sports or just sort of who is the better city in the region. Unquestionably Kansas City, speaking not of sports, but unquestionably Kansas City.
How long is that drive?
It's about 4 hours.
Okay.
It's an easy drive.
The Midwest, it's a popover.
It's a normal drive.
Yeah.
Just running errands.
Yeah.
Just back and forth. Let me pop in. I'm super excited for it. I do feel for some of the folks I see on Twitter saying, hey, you know, 9 p.m. local on a Sunday night is a tough start for us. Flip side is I didn't know that soccer capital status ended at 10 p.m.
No.
So I think you just got to get through it. You know, the kids might be tired the next day, but they will never forget.
That's
maybe like
recycling his own joke from the group chat. So
I deserve it. That was deserved. I didn't sell it as well here as I did in the group chat, to be fair. So
it landed very well in the group chat.
Yeah. It should be fun. I think it's the best series from just a neutral entertainment value.
I was talking with someone at work the other night after the game, and we were talking about like what is the best series, and I said it's this one. Because this is the one that we're potentially still talking about 30 years from now. In the same way that we referenced the 1985 World Series, which of course had a famous blown call that benefited the Royals and screwed the Cardinals, which is great. I was a Mets fan at that point in my life, so I was happy to see the Cardinals lose. And the same way, I was a Metro Stars fan, I still think back to 1996 and that first series against DC United in the playoffs, and that's almost 30 years ago now. This one, it feels like... These three games this year have been great.
Yeah.
The first one was just because they came out and St. Louis was all over Sporting Kansas City and they beat the hell out of them. And it was amazing to watch because it's like, nobody in that stadium sat down for 90 minutes. The players were all jacked up for it. It's Casey looked like they got hit by a bus. The second one, it's over in KC and Sporting gave it right back to them. Sporting gave, and then the third one, which was another blowout win. 65 minutes, Sporting KC was the better team
easily
in that game.
Roman Berkey was the biggest game changer.
Incredible in that game. And like you could hear the fans starting to, and then Bradley Carnell makes a line change. And like the
line change.
Yeah, right. The final 20 minutes of that game, it just went from, you know, Sporting, it went from blue to red. It has been incredible, and it feels like this is the start of a 100 years war, man. Yeah. Like I've been dying for this.
Yeah, it's true, because it's like you mentioned it, right? There's already a natural rivalry just with the cities, but for it to happen the way it's happened this year in the regular season, and then in St. Louis's first season to make this a 3-game playoff between these two, you couldn't ask for a more, I guess, organic way for a rivalry to truly begin. And it's gonna be crazy over there too. So the atmosphere will be good. The cities already don't like each other as it is. So it's just gonna be a perfect start to this rivalry in the first year.
Is the regression gonna hit St. Louis at all, Dave? Because they've lost. I mean, the form is not necessarily there for them. A loss to Vancouver and then a loss to Seattle coming into this match. Whereas Kansas City has, you know, clawed their way into the playoffs and then not a vintage performance by any means, but had an emotional high after a shootout win against San Jose.
It's a big question that everyone's talking about, which is St. Louis historic season, historic expansion season. But as you said, some of the underlying numbers go against it being sustainable. I would say because it is a sport where there are two teams on the field, Kansas City would have to be able to take advantage of that. Now, there are times this year where I've thought they were capable of that, and there are times where I didn't. Didn't feel like that San Jose game was really one of those signs that this is a group that's going to go to St. Louis and be efficient enough in possession and play through pressure that they're going to be able to score goals. I don't know how much of that was San Jose sort of just throwing a lump on the field and saying, like, we don't really care. That's not really what we're here for. I've asked the question for St. Louis, not just the regression, but sort of then what's the next level? MLS playoffs are different than the regular season. St. Louis hasn't been here before, and none of the players have. We talk about all these pieces that have come together that don't have a ton of experience and were unexpected. They're not players that have gone deep in MLS playoff runs. Tim Parker has a little bit of experience. It's about it. It's not like Jake Nowinski's been there. Markinich, like all the MLS pieces. And then obviously the players who didn't come from MLS have no idea. So I think Kansas City has a ton of advantages, but when I watch that third game and you talk about the shift in momentum and the line change, when it goes bad for KC, it goes really bad.
Oh, yeah.
And if St. Louis comes out with the energy we expect, in that atmosphere we expect, and they're efficient or good or get an early goal, I worry that it collapses for Kansas City pretty quickly. And now you're in an elimination game in game two.
Yeah. But you get it at home.
Yeah.
The issue for Kansas City, I think, really stems around the center backs. When you watch all three of these games, St. Louis just killed Kansas City, winning the ball quickly in central midfield, usually around that midfield line, and then immediately just looking forward. Yep. Just looking up, and it's not complicated. It's Sam Adeniran peeling off and running in behind a defender. It's any direct ball at those center backs, over them, around them, isolating them in some way, and then just going as directly to goal as possible. And those are the situations Kansas City struggled in. And when Kansas City was good at home, they beat that press.
Yeah.
In that middle third, they beat the press and then they broke quickly. And St. Louis all year long has had issues in those transition moments when the press gets broken. If they're a little bit stretched or, you know, there's space between lines, if you play quickly against them in those moments, they're running backwards and they're scrambling, and their scrambling defense has been saved by Roman Berkey. So to me, it's all about that moment. St. Louis, as you've said many times in your columns, Doyle, and as the eye test shows you, they're not Red Bulls. They're not going to be up in your grill on top of your 18. Going to let you build out a little bit, try to win it, and then once you've stretched yourself just that little bit, direct, and that's the key to the match.
Yep. I have nothing to add to that. That was really well done.
Let me add in, for this game one, the line change, the depth for St. Louis, the energy they play with, that KC's coming off a midweek playoff game and then has to travel to St. Louis. So while St. Louis has been off for a week relaxing and was a home game on decision day, so he's been home now for 2 weeks, Kansas City had to play again midweek. Johnny Russell doesn't play a full 90. He's playing, but he's not fully fit. Polito's back from injury, limping off after PKs and all the other question marks around some of the aging pieces in this team. They got to go from a Wednesday night game, must win 90 minutes plus penalties, straight to turn around on Sunday and go play a team that likes to play at a certain tempo in that atmosphere.
No Johnny Russell, by the way, in that third meeting. Johnny Russell did not play in that game. So that's really the one player through both sides who would be quote-unquote first choice that wouldn't be available. I would expect Sam and Dinneran to start this match. I know Joachini started the last one against Seattle, and it sort of felt like Bradley Carnell was shifting things and trying to figure things out. How did Kansas City win the game and then take an advantage in this series, Steph?
I don't know. Just based off that last game that we saw Sporting Kansas City, I don't know how they do that with this St. Louis team. I think you're going to have to get a performance. You're going to have Johnny Russell be Johnny Russell and be healthy enough to do that. And I think you're going to need some magic from Pulido to have some sort of success in this game. If they can take a lead early, rattle St. Louis a little bit, get their fans a little nervous, get their fans out of it a little bit, then I think that they do have a chance to win that first game. But winning this series, I think it's going to be tough for them.
I agree with the first goal, by the way.
Yeah.
Because that sets the tone for St. Louis, has set the tone for them at home all year long. It forces the visitors to have to expand a little bit and push forward, and it's that space that they absolutely crush.
Yep.
So, yeah, it should be fun. Should be fun. Any predictions for game one?
Are we doing
it? We're doing them. We didn't have it in the rundown meeting, but I've just decided.
Not doing it first because I've been around you guys.
Kansas City.
You won't.
I think win the series.
Wow.
I think St. Louis win game one.
Are we doing all of that? Or are we just...
I don't know. I'm just flowing here.
Kansas City had 1.71 points per game over the last 24 games of the season, which was the best mark in the Western Conference. We saw them beat St. Louis. We saw them, I think, outplay St. Louis. I don't know. I'm stalling for time. You guys...
I'll say 3-1 St. Louis in the first game. I think they win it in three games. I think that Kansas City will win the game at home.
I just like that you actually did a thing because everyone else here is... Well,
what are you talking about? I said St. Louis win the first one and Kansas City win the series.
I'll say St. Louis win the first game and they win the series.
Yeah, I'll go with that too.
Okay. I feel good. I feel good being over here. Still love you, St. Louis folks. Second city in the Midwest. Columbus, Atlanta is number two on our list. This is, I mean, if you want goals, these are the number one and number two goal scoring teams in the entire league. They will meet on Wednesday, November 1st. So a little bit of a break on that one in Columbus, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Of course, Apple TV, MLS season pass. Atlanta will come into this game without their best player, Thiago Almada. And the crew will come into it in year one with Wilfred Nancy trying to make a big, big jump. Sell us on the game. Sell us on the series, Dave.
I think you started. It's the worst defense in the league in Atlanta, most entertaining attack in the league in Columbus, going up against each other. They are two clubs where I think they have the theory that they're going to open it up and let it play, that they're not going to try and close things down just to win one game.
They can't close things down.
Well, on Atlanta's side,
yes.
They have no choice. They're not going to, so it doesn't even matter.
They've been better as of late.
Yeah, because they're not just dropping numbers behind the ball, right? They're finishing games up. I say, if we try to defend in our own box, we're giving up an equalizer.
All due respect to the LA Galaxy, who are the worst defensive team in MLS this year. Atlanta are the worst defensive team in the entire 18-team playoff field.
Right. So it's what you want to see. It is young stars from a very different backgrounds that are in this game that are really fun to watch. Thiago Almada suspended for the first game. You still have Diego Rossi. You still have Cucho. You have Matan. You have Shande Silva. You have Yakumakis. Like, there's a ton of attacking talent. These teams are loaded. The fan bases care. The buildings will be filled. I think this is going to be like track meet stuff.
How do you approach leg one without Almada? We've had a lot of debates about this. We had another one earlier this morning.
Yeah.
Whether you fight fire with fire and just stick with the 4-2-3-1 and attacking midfielder, two wingers, and just say, here we come. Or do you go on the road and get a little more pragmatic?
There's no like for like, and not just in terms of quality, but I went through the numbers, and Almada takes 22% of Atlanta's total touches in the attacking third. Like, that's the third or fourth highest. That's like Carlos Heul. Bello Reynoso territory. I don't think you put another guy in there and say, like, a Marsadic, go ahead and do this. Like, I think you
just... It'd be like Lobodjanica, right? You try to
move him inside and have Mascara play.
Yeah.
I mean,
really what you want to do with
I think, yeah. Honestly, I think you just drop the line and you say the first game, we're just going to try to play on the break. And I think if anything, maybe you put Tristan Mayumba in as sort of a false 10, a destroying number 10, because if he's pushed up against Aiden Morris, less so Darlington Nagbe, a little bit of looseness on the ball there can lead to runouts. So I think you drop the line, you go more defensive in central midfield, and then you allow the wingers to play higher because you know that Columbus's wingbacks are going to, they're just attackers, right? So I think you have to play for the counterattack, and I don't like doing that. I don't think that's Atlanta's identity, but they lost their identity when Almada picked up that very, very stupid red card on decision day.
I mean, you do have Giakoumakis in the box who's going to get his head on service.
Yep.
So that, yeah, it could be a way. Having those wingers bomb down and put service into the box for Giakoumakis.
Have him cheat. Like, have him stay higher and just, like, okay, we're not going to be able to break Columbus's shape with the ball because we lost our number 10. But we could just break Columbus's shape a little bit, put it in the back of the wingback's head with the positioning of our wingers, because it's a nightmare trying to run down either Silva or Saba, you know, in the open field.
Just call him Saba.
Saba, yeah.
and to your point about Giakoumakis, when you see some of the goals Columbus has conceded, they are not dangerous crosses. Schulte struggles his decision-making coming off the line, and then he struggles in any situation in which he has physical contact with a forward. We know Giakoumakis can, you know, sort of find space in there. It'll probably be Marrera and Zwadzki starting alongside Camacho. You would take Giakoumakis in an aerial 50-50 against any of them. So I think it's a good point of, like, Atlanta will get some chances. Do you want to try and condense the game a little bit? Or do you say, this isn't an aggregate thing, let's go out, let's rip it, and if we're up 2-0, we're up 2-0.
I mean, that's the question.
I don't think it's, like, outside the realm of possibility that they'll try. I agree with Doyle that they don't have the pieces to do it, so it doesn't make sense. But also, like, what do you have to lose?
The issue is, do they have the pieces in midfield to play the counterattacking way as well? I mean, I think Sedic is a good rotational player in MLS, but he's probably not, like, we feel great.
Let's go Terps.
I mean, it's maybe you see if Ozzie Alonso has 60 minutes.
It's Rossetto and it's Mayumba. I mean, the one thing I will say is, like, if you're gonna attack and you're gonna say we're gonna be a cross heavy team, and I think that would be a good idea, and I would also say early crosses are your friend as well. Like, try to put that ball in when the crew are recovering and moving backwards, and Giakoumakis is attacking the ball. Brooks Lennon, Caleb Wiley, both those guys can get in positions to serve those ball. Lennon in particular has really good early service from the right-hand side. But then that exposes you if they go forward.
Right.
So this is like it's a matchup of, like, Gonzalo Pineda deciding, where do I want to expose myself? In what parts of the game?
Are we not doing phrasing anymore? <That's fair. laughs>
The other option is
my team.
I'm
going to
blow through this for you. The other option would be you start Miguel Berry up top as a second forward.
Sorry, that was good.
And you just play direct to them and then let sort of your two forwards play together in transition moments when
I don't think
Columbus
you could go with a two
high
up top, because you don't want to concede that much midfield ground to this Columbus team. I think you have to bring another destroyer into central, whether it's Ozzie has a few minutes.
Ozzie did not dress last game.
Okay. So he's probably not. Yeah. So, he's also my age. you know, or Sadik, or, I mean, God, do you dust off Santiago Sosa and see if he can do anything?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Frankie Ribar is available. His season's over. It feels like what we're talking about right now.
This goes back
Ozzie
to
has played 91
by
minutes
way
this season.
Yeah, it's not great. Not been good.
Goes back to roster construction. When Garth got there, he was like, we got some issues, and they fixed some of them in the middle of the season, and that's what gives them this option, but they still have those issues.
I honestly just don't think Atlanta have a chance in the first game. I think in that second game, in front of 65,000 people or whatever it'll be.
With Almada back,
like, that is going to be do or die for them, I think. And they have the pieces to be anybody in this league. But the funny part is, whenever they're on the ball, they're often really, really good and really bad at the same time, because none of the attackers gets immediate pressure to the opposing back line or defensive midfielders when there's a turnover. So you see, like, very simple passes over the top to, like, any runner running in behind. And of course, like, that's not Columbus's game, but they're pragmatic when they need to. Like, if you can dump it to Diego Rossi in the channel.
And then Cucho following up and Ramirez or whoever for pullbacks. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be a tough one.
Let's do it.
First game.
I'm excited for it. Crew Atlanta, again, Wednesday night, MLS season pass. Yeah.
Want to make a prediction?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Columbus
I already forgot.
Wins the game and the war.
Nice. Nice.
Crew in two.
Crew in two.
Wow. Crew in two.
Same. And that first game is going to be like a 4-1 shellac, in my opinion.
Crew in three. I don't think game one's going to be as much of a beatdown as, I mean, the 6-1 win that the Crew had on Atlanta back in, I think, March was. But I think it's a crew win with Yakumakis getting a goal. Wow. And then Atlanta win at home.
Way out on a limb saying it's not going to be 6-1.
Yeah, right.
Just trying to provide a little context for the people.
Yakumakis,
Andrew Weeby from the group chat. It'll be 6-1.
Yeah. just dropped it in there. LAFC Vancouver. Let's jump over back to the Western Conference here for LAFC Vancouver. This is a rematch from CCL, from Decision Day, going down on Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, right here on MLS Season Pass. This is your job, Doyle. Sell us on the match.
It's two teams that can win MLS Cup. I think we all, I mean, I know that LAFC have disappointed by some measures this year. I mean, namely against Liga MX teams in big moments. But by the underlying numbers, they were one of the two best teams in MLS all season long. They hit heights the first 10-12 games of the season. That might be the best any MLS team has played all year long. It's a long time ago now, but it's not like they were bad down the stretch. Quite the opposite. The Caps, since midseason, have been one of the best teams in the Western Conference. They won Canadian Championship. They won Cascadia Cup for the first time in forever. They're able to attack without exposing themselves too badly. Because Gold and White are so good together, and because the midfield does such a good job of winning the ball and then playing it early, and then they don't waste time in the attacking third. Like, they're very direct. Like, they can be patient building from the back, but once they get into the attacking third, they tend to be very direct, and like, they never let a scramble defense go to waste. It's like, this should be like that Decision Day game was really, really good. This series should be really, like, this series should be going three games.
What's LAFC's weakness? And is there a pressure on them? You mentioned Liga MX failures. But they haven't won anything this year, and they started the season in the sort of form that made you think they could win everything. Anders was even in production meetings saying, is this the best team of all time? That's what he was saying. He was mulling that over.
Their weakness in attack is that their midfield lacks dynamism. None of the players that they have in that central midfield rotation now breaks lines with their passing all that often. And for a team that really wants to attack in transition, doesn't want to knock the ball around in the attacking third, that's been a problem for them. And the way that Steve Cherundolo has tried to solve it is by playing Carlos Vela as a false nine and having him drop into midfield and be the midfield playmaker. And there are moments where that works really, really well. But there are so many moving pieces to that and so many rotations that need to happen in order for it to be effective, that if, like, there can be points of failures any place along that series of rotations, and then the whole thing falls apart and it's kind of back to the drawing board. Now, LAFC are very good at the back to the drawing board stuff because they win the ball really high upfield. I think only the Red Bulls win the ball higher upfield, and only Red Bulls win the ball upfield more often than LAFC. So they can press their way to goals. That's really good. But if they're on the ball a lot, they don't have the same attacking flair and effectiveness that I think we've seen from previous versions. Defensively, I mean, it's speed at the center backs. Aaron Long can't run like he used to. Chiellini's not going to, you know, run anybody down in the open field. Jesus Murillo isn't really going to run anybody down in the open field. Like, you can get behind a team that likes to bring their line up.
One of the matchup things that stands out in this one is Vancouver have been one of the best defensive teams in the league over the last month and a half. Their final three games were St. Louis, Seattle, and LAFC. They gave up one goal in those three games combined to close out the year.
And they did that without Andres Kupas.
Right.
Wow. And he's back.
Right. And over the last seven games, I went back and watched through, and I would say pretty much outside of two goals, all of them came off either long strikes or set pieces. LAFC don't score off set pieces. So for Vancouver, one of their biggest weaknesses, I think, sort of goes out the door because LAFC are not going to take advantage.
And remember, LAFC destroyed teams on set pieces last year, including a great defensive Philadelphia Union team.
Yeah, that's how they won MLS Cup. I think they have six goals direct off set pieces.
They had two off of set pieces in MLS Cup last year.
Yeah, so that, I think, leans to Vancouver of this is a little bit safer. When they have their proper three in the back, three center backs in Kubas, you can't play through them and you can't get around them. So, or you don't get behind them. So like your options of how you attack are very limited. You look at decision day, it's a Seb Berhalter turnover direct into Buonga's feet who attacks zone 14 and scores.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen with Andres Kubas on the field.
Right.
And that's the only goal LAFC scored in that matchup. So,
and again, it's the only goal Vancouver
gave up
in a three-game run against the top three teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah, so I think a lot of it falls on Vancouver's attack, performing in big moments, and that wasn't the case in CCL against LAFC where they had their chances and they didn't take advantage. And so I think that's where there's a level of pressure that falls on it, and it's whether or not these players can elevate. It's the next step.
Is this LAFC's like worst possible matchup going into the playoffs against this Vancouver team? Because now it's a team, like you mentioned, how their midfield is just not as dynamic as it used to be. I also would say that they don't really control games for the midfield anymore. Yeah. Not when Cifuentes was there, Atuesta was there, where they were able to control the games from that midfield and just allow Vela to do his thing up top and hit him on different runs. Is this, with a fit Vancouver Whitecaps, with Andres Kubas, is this possibly the worst matchup LAFC could have?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vancouver's really freaking good.
Yeah.
It feels like the Orlando Nashville one for me as well, the way you're like, you know, the one team we don't really want to get is Nashville.
Yeah.
And then you end up getting them.
But in this case, it's more about like, it's just a stylistic matchup that's tough. In this one, it's just like Vancouver is clearly not the sixth best team in the Western Conference. Yeah. I think they're a top three team in the Western Conference.
Adekube hasn't really started. Last game, Richie started on the left, switched at halftime to the right, and Raposo started. I just think when you're talking about a playoff series, you need as much talent as you can. And I think him and Kubas, depending how fit they are, is massive for this team of being able to have those players on the field. Otherwise, I think most of the team sort of picks itself in a positive way. I will say, going back and looking at the goals over the last month and a half, Takayoko hasn't been fantastic. And so I think there's a question mark there, but it's not really a strength for LAFC that's an advantage in this series.
Now, on PKs, Maxime Crepeau knows a thing or two about the Vancouver Whitecaps and maybe some of their tendencies from training. And also Ryan Gauld is, I don't know, probably fine, but missing two on decision day is not the ideal way to go into a playoff round that may require PK fortitude. So TBD, that's the nightcap in the first night of these first round games. LAFC Vancouver, 8 p.m. Eastern time from BMO Stadium in LA on MLS Season Pass. Our next game, Orlando Nashville.
Did we make predictions? Are we done?
I forgot about that. I'm sorry. Once I invented it for the first one, somehow my brain just erased it for the rest.
You start
of
us.
I will start. Vancouver win this series.
Wow.
And the game?
I think this one, I'm going to say it's a 3-game series, and I think it goes to PKs in the first game. And I don't have my crystal ball right now, so I don't know who wins that
one. Remember
what
Vancouver did in PKs in the Leagues Cup? They had like
21 rounds.
Yeah.
That was, and Luis Martins first missed night. Twice.
I think it was might have even been 23 rounds.
Yeah, it was after Messi's free kick.
Right. It was that same night, first night of the.
And then Gauld missed two penalties. I think for Vancouver, one of the worries is that Sergio Cordova is not available.
Big worry.
He actually had an assist. I think he had an assist in the first matchup because it was the match where Ilya played.
I thought you had like foot mob up tracking the Turkish league. So anytime Sergio Cordova did anything, you're like, hey, Doyle, did you?
No. But I'm going to visit him in the offseason because we're close. I'll say I think Vancouver wins the series as well. I don't know. I'm just going to assume every series goes to 3 games.
Yeah. I'm there. 3 games. I think Vancouver figure out a way to get it done.
I'll say it. 3 games. LAFC squeaks it out.
Yes. Yeah, somebody's got to break the consensus.
We can't look
stupid in mass. We got to have at least one person who looks
smart. One person
be
right. Like,
come on, hedge your bets here.
Don't worry. LAFC fans never complain about the picks you make.
Correct.
Super chill about it. Yeah.
Orlando fans also generally chill on Twitter. They will take on Nashville. Really, really good matchup. out in the Eastern Conference. That one will go down Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time from Exploria Stadium. Again, you know where to watch this. MLS season pass. Let's get things started with our chat with one Duncan McGuire. Big Doug! Duncan McGuire, a man in wonderful form heading into the MLS Cup playoffs. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about the first goal against Toronto, Duncan. That's one that's going to live in people's memories for a long time. I'm sure in your memory, even longer. Best goal you've ever scored in competition, or is there one out there better?
I don't know. From what I remember, you know, that's probably my best goal I've ever scored. You know, just the flick over the defender's head at a half field, and then just the volley from outside the box. Yeah, it was a special goal for sure, and definitely the best one of my career so far.
Tell me about the half volley technique. Walk us through that finish.
I don't know. The first time I played Toronto, I had the same like opportunity, and it bounced and I hit the post, and I was like, I had that situation ran through my mind in the played at Toronto, and I was like, hey, I'll give this another shot. Maybe I won't hit the post this time. And then I ended up hitting the best goal of my life, so I'll take it.
It's a good way to plot that out. Duncan, so much has changed for you this season from the start of the season to now. You're now the first-choice striker on one of the top teams going into the playoffs in MLS. How much have your goals and outlook changed from the beginning of the season to now?
Yeah, for sure. Coming in as a rookie, you know, you're not expecting to play much, and you don't feel like there's a little bit of weight on your shoulders. But, you know, now being the starting striker, you know, scoring some goals for the team, you know, you feel a bit of pressure on your shoulders. You feel a sense of responsibility for the team as the guys look to you for goals. So, yeah, definitely my outlook and on the team and what I feel like I have to provide has changed over the season, but I feel like it's been a good change.
When did you know, Duncan? When did you know you could carry that burden?
I think for any striker, just once you get that first goal, you feel like that's the hardest one to get. And then once you get that one out of the way, the rest just comes. So once I got that first goal, I was full of confidence and I knew I could score at this level. And, ever since then, I've just been riding high with confidence and haven't looked back since.
Another person who knew you could score at this level was Bradley Wright Phillips. Back in February, I sat down with him and we went through your college highlight reel. And what stood out to us, there weren't a lot of bangers like the one you scored against Toronto, but yeah. Your ability to find space in the box and finish like one-touch finishes, box movement, understanding the way the play was unfolding. To do that in college and then to see it scale into MLS, for some people, was very predictable to see it happen. But that did not happen in your first 2 years in college. And even with Lane United and in between college seasons, it's not like I think you had 4 goals in 10 games, something like that. Is there a light that went off for you, or is it just you finally got the reps and you finally got out there when chances were being generated?
Yeah, definitely the first 2 years I found myself in a bit of a struggle. I couldn't really find confidence or I wasn't really watching film or putting myself in good positions to score. And, you know, the spring before my last season of college, we started going more over film. You know, they had me watch strikers, you know, movements in the box. And you know, I started paying attention more to my own movements, watching film on myself more, where I could be in a better spot. So, you know, I just kind of started learning better and taking it more seriously. And ever since then, you know, I just have kept learning in better and better spots to be in and different ways to score.
When you watch film now, how much of it is going back and watching yourself to figure out ways to improve, and how much of it is watch like Lewandowski, his box movement is maybe the best I've ever seen. Like how much of it is watching the top level guys and saying, okay, I have to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Lewandowski and, you know, Suarez were the ones I'd watched, you know, in college when I first started watching film on strikers. They were the huge influence in my box movement for sure. And you know, nowadays mainly it's just I'll go over myself and just see, like, realize what I could have done better. But yeah, for sure, those guys have a huge influence in how I play today.
Speaking of influence, how much influence has Oscar Pareja had on this, you know, kind of a come to moment for you in this season?
Yeah, he's been an amazing help. He definitely knows how to be a very good coach for college guys, as he showed it with DK. And he's been a big help. He knows when to push me. He understands what I wanted to achieve in this first season. So he understood what I wanted, and he knew how to push me and when to coach me a little bit more. But yeah, he's been an unbelievable help and a very good coach this first season.
You mentioned Daryl. DK, of course, came out of college, huge success in Orlando, then went over to Europe to play in England. We've heard some connections with you and some big name clubs. What are your thoughts on that and sort of your future?
I mean, the goal has always been to, eventually get over to Europe and test my skills over there with some top quality, teams and players. So that's the end goal. But, as of right now, I'm just focused on what's ahead of me, and that's the playoffs with Nashville. And then, playing for the national team, as that recently came up for the Olympic team. Yeah, that's a big thing I want to get to, and it's something I've wanted to do for a while. So that's also on my sights.
Do you have a sense of where you stand in the hierarchy with that Olympic team? Because Ricardo Pepi is also eligible for the Olympics, not as an overage guy. They could bring in an overage guy as well. Have you had conversations with the coaches after this most recent camp?
No, not yet. So, no idea. But I thought I had a good camp, so hopefully I'll get the
scored a goal. Did a flip?
How long have you been doing the flip as your celebration?
Just since college, sophomore year. I haven't been doing them that long, but I've been able to do a flip longer than that.
Okay, I just haven't
done it on video.
Gotcha. That was definitely my next question. Was it I learned how to flip, now I got to flip every time, or was that just in the bag and then eventually got out?
Yeah, I was probably 10 or 11 when my dad helped me learn it. So ever since then, I've been able to do, a bunch of flips.
We have two dads at the table, so I was seeing if maybe
taking notes there.
They were going to do flips.
Eight or nine, we start doing the flips.
So we shouldn't do it to my 4-year-old just yet. It's a little too early.
But you have to be able to do it.
Nice try. That's not happening.
Let's talk Nashville, because you brought it up. The playoffs coming up. You scored against them a little while ago. In that matchup, you faced off against Walker Zimmerman and Jack Mayer, two of the best center backs, one of the best back lines, one of the best defenses in MLS. What's that battle like for you? What are you thinking about going into it?
Definitely very tough back line. They very compact, very hard to break down, and it's definitely going to be a tough game offensively for us. It might be hard to get going as they are that good. So yeah, it's going to take a lot of film and practice these upcoming days. Trying to figure out ways to break them down. But yeah, it's going to be a very exciting series, I hope, and going to be a good game for sure.
Do you like to engage physically early? Do you like to set that tone, or do you like to try and pull the center backs away and sort of open up space?
I like a little bit of both. Kind of like to, wrestle some fetters early, or I like to create space when I can. So it doesn't either or works for me.
So the issue at the beginning of the season for you guys is that the road form for Orlando seemed to be better than the home form. And at least watching the games, the eye test for me, teams just seemed to say, hey, we're going to sit back. You got to break us down. And there was a lot of horizontal passing, and you weren't really able to be vertical at all and get toward goal. Chance creation was an issue. But it feels like that changed over the course of the year. How have you seen your side sort of evolve tactically in 2023?
Yeah, we, like you said, the away form was a lot better than the home form, and we realized that was a huge issue. And that's just the complete opposite of how it should be. And we realized we were in the goals category in the league. We were bottom tier, not creating many chances, not scoring many goals. So we just realized we had to fix something in our attack. And that seemed like it was just putting more bodies forward, being more ambitious when going forward. So yeah, we've definitely added a few more ways to go forward, and added a few more tactics over the years. And so yeah, it's been a very successful change ever since we had that slump at the beginning of the year. So yeah, it's been quite a big change for us over the year.
Duncan, your first time in the MLS Cup playoffs, so you don't have the baggage of years past or that experience, but there is a big change in the first round. 3-game series straight to PKs, 2 games won, and you move on. From a player's perspective, what do you think about this change, about this series, and maybe how it'll affect the approach to games?
Yeah, definitely, you know, from a player's perspective, it's kind of, you know, odd doing the one round completely different from the rest of the rounds. That's just my opinion on it. I don't know how I'll feel about it after the first round. But, yeah, from it definitely having the best of three series, you know, it's nice to be able to potentially play two games at home and take advantage of that when you can. But, yeah, it's definitely, you know, if you – the nerves might come out in the first game for some people, and, you know, that if you lose, you still have two more chances. So, you know, the playoff nerves might not be – play much of an effect in some teams, as they can have two more games after that. So it'll be interesting to see how the first round plays out for us and most teams.
Duncan, we're just trying to get the most games possible so you can score the most goals possible.
Well, when you say it like that, I guess I would be okay with it.
What's the moment that you're looking forward to most? I mean, obviously you've got a bunch of games under your belt professionally now, but when you get to Exploria, when you walk out, when you see the fans, what's the thing that gets you going?
100% the fans. You know, they've been showing out recently. They've been, you know, as loud as can be. You can barely hear my teammates trying to talk to me on the field, and that's just such a special moment for us on the field, and it really pushes us. So, you know, when we walk out of that tunnel and see a fully packed house, that'd mean the world to us.
All right, Monday night, packed house in Orlando. The Lions hosting Nashville. You can watch MLS Season Pass, 7 p.m. Eastern. Of course, full coverage there. It's also available on FS1. Big Dunk, thank you, man. All right, big thanks to Duncan McGuire, who is in some kind of form and looking at the here and now, but also maybe the future of his career. Let's focus on this first game, though, between Orlando and Nashville. Steph, sell us.
I think this game could get pretty chippy. I think there can be some pushing, some shoving, some teams. They're going to get on each other's nerves. I think their midfield... We were talking about it before with Cesar Araujo in the midfield for Orlando, with Cartagena in there as well. And with the way that it's a Gary Smith team, right? I mean, we know that they're gonna try to claw, try to do everything they can to get under their skin, because we know how they want to play. They're going to sit back, they're going to wait for the counter, and in the meantime, they're going to try to piss off Orlando City as much as possible. I think that it's... Also, we were talking about LAFC and Vancouver earlier. I think this could be one of the more interesting matchups just because of the way the teams will want to play. It'll be fighting to see who's going to play what style.
Go ahead, Weaver.
Yeah, how many goals are we going to get here?
I mean, if Gary Smith has his way, one. Right? Yeah. But I think we all agree these are two teams that could win MLS Cup.
Yeah.
This is the other first-round matchup, Vancouver, LAFC, and the Western Conference, this one in the East. Now, I know Nashville haven't looked like it. I maintain that the real version of Nashville is the version we saw in the League's Cup. And one of the things about playoffs is you get here and you turn the page. It's a brand new season in its way. The rub is, obviously, they're going to have to be on the road for most of it. I think that gives Orlando the edge. I think over the course of three games between Maguire and Facu Torres and Mauricio Pereira and, you know, the fullbacks coming up, I just think they're going to have enough to break Nashville down.
Do you think Hani and Sam Surridge break out, Dave? Two goals in his last 16 regular season games for Hani. I know that's cherry picking because there were a couple goals in League's Cup, but that's still, even if you say, hey, it's four goals in his last, I don't know, 20 games in all comps or 22, whatever it took to get there. That still is not at Hani levels. And Sam Surridge has two goals in MLS, and they both came in the same game.
Yeah, it's tough to say, because when you look at that New England game, for example, a lot of the areas Hani picked up to be dangerous, Orlando fills, because they have such good defensive midfielders. They have two options there probably most of the time. They're pretty organized along the back line. They do push their fullbacks a bit, and so the question would be, is Schaffelberg fit to help take advantage? Can Fafa elevate his game like I think we saw through a lot of League's Cup? Leal came off hurt on decision day, so is he available? And if he is, can he be that player? I haven't really seen it a lot over his Nashville career, so there's a ton of question marks there, but I will say the two goals Surge scored against New England, those are goals that Hani creates for all of the players he's played with in Nashville, and no one else has taken advantage. So I do think it is the most talent available. I think it'll be a good challenge if you get Lovitz and Shaq more high for Robin Jansen and Antonio Carlos to have to battle with Serge? And does that make life easier for Hani to sort of live on some knockdowns? They haven't played together that much. So the hope is that this is really them hitting their form together as you go through this playoff run. I think if you're in Nashville, you're confident about this series. It's a winnable series, right? You're not playing a buzzsaw. I think most of the time on the field, you have the best player on the field. I think you could argue in other spots, you have the second best player on the field, depending on what it looks like late in games. So I think for the most part, Nashville will feel fairly comfortable. And that's where it's, can Orlando get under Nashville's skin, or does Orlando lose it themselves? And we saw that, I think, last year towards the end of the season at times from this Orlando team. What's Schlegel doing? Schlegel ready for his time of year?
Is Felipe ready for his time
of year? Schlegel season?
This is Schlegel season.
Let's bring it back to our interview, though. How good is Duncan McGuire? Is he good enough to be the best forward in the Eastern Conference, we'll say, throughout a deep playoff run? Where not a lot of 22-year-olds have done. I think Carlos Ruiz was 23 when he did it for the Galaxy in 2002.
Yeah, I don't worry about McGuire. I worry about Ojeda and Torres.
You worry about Facu Torres?
Yeah. I worry about the actual production and chance creation.
Okay.
Less than that, if McGuire gets a legitimate amount of chances, he'll put them away. Yeah.
On the other side with Nashville, I feel like that game we saw them against New England where Serge scored his two goals, that might have been the most entertaining game, Nashville game I've ever seen. Like, they were actually fun to watch, and they were
felt creating. Like an outlier.
I mean, don't forget Toluca, man. Don't forget Toluca.
That's true. That game was true.
That was unreal. Crazy game. If that's the Nashville we get. Now, in that game, they also gave up two goals, which is also something that we don't see too often from Gary Smith defense. But if they get that Sam Surge and that Hani being able to create for him, this series is up in the air for sure.
I'm just looking back at League's Cup games. I don't know what the real Nashville is this year.
That's a problem.
What I'll say is they have a healthy and rested Dax McCarty. And that is huge for them.
He was suspended for decision day.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
It feels like we're going to see something.
They also should have a healthy Walker Zimmerman and Jack Mayer, which they didn't have all of League's Cup.
Yep.
That's fair. Yeah. What's the percentage possession for Nashville in this first game?
40.
Yeah. That's about where I'm at.
Yeah. But they're comfortable with that, right?
Yeah, no, 100%.
A lot of teams are going to play that way away.
And the thing is, we've seen Orlando become a lot more comfortable over the course of the year with having 60. So this is, I think it's going to be very, I think it's going to be three very hard fought games.
And your prediction is?
Orlando in three.
Is anyone going to pick a non-3 game series?
I did.
I said crew
and
two.
You said crew and two. Okay. I'll pick Nashville in three.
Orlando in two.
Ooh,
had to be different.
Yeah, once you said nobody picked that, and I was like, I got to get on the
Pissarro
bandwagon here.
Or Orlando in three.
Okay.
So I'm the only one picking Nashville.
Yeah, you're standing alone. The cheese stands alone.
I love that. That makes me feel better about my pick.
Houston RSL is our next one. Houston, are they every neutral's favorite team right now? Is there a team that somebody would like more than Houston? Like watching, Columbus. Experiencing, rooting for?
I think Columbus.
Columbus? You think so?
I don't know. Are we all neutrals? Who's your favorite team to watch in MLS?
He's wearing an FC Dallas kit.
I'm wearing the taco kit from years past and talking about how Houston.
In abstract, who's the number one MLS team you'd want to watch in just a random game?
Yeah, the Crew for sure. And I would have said that. I would have said that months ago as well.
Yeah.
Well, this intro really fell flat. Yeah.
But the West version.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to prove.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
The West version is Houston.
Yeah,
for sure.
And that's what a lot of people have always said about Houston as a city. It's the Columbus of the West.
Look, the way they control the ball, the relationship Ben Olsen clearly has with his players, Ace's resurgence from sort of malcontent to the guy that you don't want to see in a dark alley or with the ball at his feet, is just so fun. And then RSL have always, what?
I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't know. He looks like a tough guy.
Okay.
But you don't want to see him in an alley. Or you don't want to see him in an alley with a soccer ball at his feet.
We don't got to dig too far. however deep you dig, I'm at the bottom of that hole right now. So
I also think you got to mention Coco. I mean, Coco Kariski might be one of the best midfielders in the league for sure.
Yeah, and Corey Baird, the crab. Everybody loves them. And RSL, it feels like this time of year, nobody but RSL fans love them, and they're used to that. So they like playing X-Dog and playing the underdog. Are the Dynamo ready for the challenge, though? They won Open Cup, Doyle. Open Cup is not the MLS Cup playoffs. Are they ready?
They went on the road a bunch, and they won in the Open Cup, including against Miami, but there was no Lionel Messi on that team. They beat Sporting Kansas City on the road, I think, but it was back at the start of the year when Sporting Kansas City was a mess. They beat Chicago on the road. So they had an easier path to winning MLS Cup than they're going to have in this Western Conference playoffs. That said, I think they're prohibitive favorites in this game. I think that midfield is going to get on the ball a ton. Corey Baird does run hot and cold, but if they create chances, he has been on the spot to finish them. What they do in terms of using the ball so well in central midfield. And when I say central midfield, I don't just mean their central midfielders getting on the ball. I mean, they play in the middle of the field. They get more touches in the middle of the field than I think everybody else in the league other than the Galaxy. But they're obviously the rest defense is much better than Galaxy's rest defense. But by compressing the game in possession so well, they compress the opposing team's shape, and that opens up, you know, lanes for the overlap on the right side and on the left. And once they hit those overlaps, obviously Griff Dorsey will have a hit on goal, but he's been very good at pulling back to the top of the box. And once it's on Coco's feet or Ace Ace's feet, or even, I mean, Basse's feet in that area, they just keep connecting passes until somebody walks the ball into the net. It's beautiful soccer, man.
Yeah. It's what I'm saying. Like, it's funny you mentioned that, because I feel like when you watch some of their goals and their highlights, you see so many times like the center backs, that back line of whoever they're playing, is all the way up at the
defending
top of the
in the left, yeah.
Defending, and then all of a sudden, oops, they're behind them. They get in behind and they score a goal. And it's because they're controlling that midfield with Achiachi, with Coco, with Artur, with everybody else that's kind of packed into that midfield. And you see it so many times. How many times do we see Corey Baird score a goal coming off the side unmarked or escaping his defender to get a goal and do the crab dance? And it's like, it's kind of crazy the way you're seeing that them dominate so much there. The defenders get sucked in completely and are out of position.
And I would say, you asked about something with good matchup, bad matchup. I think RSL doesn't have a lot to stop any of this. Yeah. The report we got was Brian Vera back in training. Marcelo Silva has a family emergency, so he's been down in Uruguay. He missed decision day. And now Justin Glad's been downgraded to 50-50.
Yeah.
So they may not have both their center backs. They haven't had Pablo Ruiz most of the season. They struggle defensively in central midfield. So now you're probably going to start more of a natural fullback, whether it's two center backs or three center backs. Most of your fullbacks are wing backs anyway.
What we saw on decision day was they went to a 3-5-2. So they played with three in the back against a Colorado team with like a fraction of the firepower that Houston has.
Right.
And like RSL got the 1-0 win, but it was not a good looking win. It was not the type of win that would instill you with confidence.
No. So I think it's a bad matchup for RSL. I think this is the most uneven series of the first round. It's the one I feel most comfortable picking. In saying all that, this is where RSL cooks.
Yes.
You've seen it happen.
They're in their office, baby.
RSL's not going to take a single shot on goal over the course of three games.
And they're going to win.
And they're going to win somehow.
No, they're going to win in two.
Yeah. Chicho. So Chicho, you guys mentioned him?
Yep. Mm-mm. No.
No, I was going to say, Chicho, look, they say he's back in training. That's what Pablo said on his radio hit on this Friday morning. But Chicho hasn't played in 3 weeks, something like that. It's been a minute since he went off with that hamstring injury. Hamstring injuries are notorious for being very easy and quick recoveries. Straight back to full strength, ability to have burst, you know, 90 minutes. So I have question marks on whether Chicho Arango is going to be ready for this game. Regardless, you got to make a prediction. Steph, where are you going?
Arango's last appearance, by the way, just October 7th, 27 minutes, then he got hurt and taken.
20 days, I said 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, no.
One day off, let's go!
I got you.
And without Chicho, I mean, where are they going to get calls from? I mean, I just don't see it. Houston in two.
Okay. What do you got, Div?
I'll say Houston in three because X-Dog. Also, it's probably going to snow. Let's be real. It's going to be a blizzard for the game.
Enough said.
Don't at altitude.
X-Dog and the red card when these two teams met in the Open Cup semifinals. Like it got heated at the end of that game. And then Houston turned around 3 days later and absolutely pummeled RSL. Houston in two.
Yeah.
Houston in three again. I just feel like RSL in the playoffs, I'm not betting on them to get quote unquote swept. Are we calling it a sweep if it's a two game?
A Dyna two? I don't know. I thought that two fit instead of mine.
No, I didn't understand.
That was really bad.
Didn't feel as good.
Honestly, it went right over my head.
I will say this. The question that you have on the second line of the rundown is, can they score enough goals, referring to the Dynamo? I think we will still have that question after this series.
Yeah.
I think Houston is going to win fairly comfortably, but we're still going to be like, I don't know. I don't know if they have enough firepower to
get all. Yeah.
McMath's been really good the last few weeks. Yeah, as well. Just sort of held them up while RSL has fallen apart. I'm in favor of anything that helps the broom industry sell more. So I'm in favor of sweeps.
The Dynamo just can't get caught on the road in the snow like I did doing sideline during a playoff
game. No.
I almost lost my toes.
Was that when they played Portland?
Yes.
That was a garbage game.
Terrible
too.
Game. And yes. It was 1-1 in the 80-something minute. And I'm just like, please, God, don't go to extra time because I cannot feel my feet. Please, God. And thankfully, they scored with a couple minutes left.
So. Just remember, always be prepared if you're going to attend a playoff match or be outside during the winter months.
I brought a heavy jacket to Red Bull Arena. And it was like 75 degrees.
Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, Shell Energy Stadium, the first leg between Houston and RSL. Right here on MLS Season Pass, there is some exasperation in producer Maria's voice. So we got efficiency, direct to goal here for these final two.
Into Santi Jimenez's feet, curled to
yes.
the corner.
Seattle-Dallas, this was fun in 2019, Dave. It could be fun again. Odds are against it being particularly fun from a goal-scoring perspective, but why couldn't we get a 4-3 maybe over the course of three?
I mean, it's pretty exciting because you literally skipped Cincinnati Red Bull on the rundown.
Did I?
How excited yeah. it was.
That's how excited you are about this series.
Oh, I that's right. Well, let's start with Seattle-Dallas.
I just like the idea that we're more excited about this one. Let's do it. Yeah, that was really fun. Dallas played like a young group of players who had nothing to lose and weren't scared of anything. I don't think maybe one time this year you could say that about FC Dallas, and that was
Miami.
This cup against Inter yep. Miami. Otherwise, they have played scared with something to lose. And then they did it again on decision day, and they stepped up. Now the LA Galaxy are a completely different test. I don't think Dallas want to play that way. Seattle struggle to create goals. They struggle to score goals. FC Dallas, one of the best defensive teams in the league. So they're going to lean back into that, and they're going to hope that Velasco and Jesus Ferreira, and I haven't seen injury report on Camungo. He came off hurt in the last game and was obviously massive on decision day, that they can create chances. Dallas are pretty dangerous on set pieces as well, but the strength of this team for Dallas is the back line, defensive mid. Martin Paz has been a top five goalkeeper, and Kosi Tafari, I think we had on one of our leagues, which he deserved. So it's not going to be anything like what you just talked about.
No, I was
Reed thinking Baker Whiting's already out for the series.
Oh God, not Reed. I was thinking 4-3 on aggregate for this one. I do not see any updates on Bernie Camungo, but with Reed Baker Whiting out, like running Camungo in behind Nuhu is probably a decent.
I would think idea. It's the opposite, right? Like, because Nuhu stays home and he could run almost anybody down in the open field. The thing with Reed Baker Whiting is he gives Seattle an attacking dynamism up that left side that they had kind of been lacking, certainly on the overlap. Leo Chu has been good. The final ball is not great from him. That's been an issue with their finishing. The real issue is Raul Ruiz Diaz and Nico Ladero both got old this year. It's questionable whether either of them is even a starter for this run. Dallas.
It seems sort of like clear that they're not.
I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
We're talking Brian Schmetzer.
Yeah, I think if Ladero is back to 100% by game two, he's in the 11 by game.
I would say there's a more than 0% chance Ozzie Alonso plays for Seattle. In this like that's the Seattle Sounders
92nd minute of the year is coming in.
So
yeah. For the Sounders.
Dallas, they've made some changes recently. They were primarily a 4-3-3 pitch control team under Nico Estevez. That's why. One of the reasons why they've been so good defensively over these past 2 years after not being very good defensively in 20 and 21, they were not able to generate enough attack off of that. So they've gone to a 4-2-3-1 now. Alan Velasco is playing as a true number 10. That has kind of messed up the front three a little bit because Velasco now plays in the pockets where Jesus Ferreira likes to drop off and be a false nine. And so there were some issues with that until they played the Galaxy, and it all looked great against the Galaxy.
As it always does.
As it always does for teams. So I have real questions as to whether Dallas can, you know, effectively threaten this Seattle team that has the best defense in the league by the underlying numbers and tied for best defense in the league by the box score numbers, like a championship level defense. This one really does come down to can Seattle put the ball in the back of the net?
Who's the most singly important player in the series?
I would have said, man, I don't know. So like the Rui Diaz thing is crazy to me just because we know how good he's been in the playoffs ever. One of the best goal scorers ever in playoff history. But him not being there, it's almost like now who does it fall on? I mean,
it's Jordan Morris, right?
Jordan Morris, yeah. It's what I'm saying. Like I think it's going to fall on him. I have zero confidence in this Dallas team. I told you guys this weeks ago, they frustrate the hell out of me. The way they play, it's just not like they had so many opportunities to lock up the playoff spot way before that Galaxy game. They couldn't get it done. They play uninspiring soccer a lot. And I think this is Seattle's to win if they can get enough goals. So I would say, yeah, Jordan Morris has to be the guy because he's going to have to be the one to put the ball in the net for them.
I think the other one is Christian Roldan, which is he can get them to a tempo that they can't normally get to. Yeah. He was really good against Dallas in the last game because Dallas sat deep and gave space and Reed Baker-Whiting created space down the left. And it was Christian crashing to be a goal scorer. Now he didn't score. So that's part of the problem as well. And it will fall to Jordan, but I think Christian's the one who sets the tone. And like, if Dallas is not going to bring energy and sort of open the game up, Seattle's going to have to sort of do that all internally, and Christian's normally the one who gets them there.
And when he came back, you saw the difference in that team, in that midfield. He made all the difference to them and made them a team where it's like, okay, this can still be that Seattle team that can come and surprise a lot of teams in the playoffs.
Roldan's on the right, Leo Chu on the left. Will they create enough service? TBD. Who wins it?
I have Seattle.
Two or three?
Three. I don't know. I'm picking three.
Yeah, I think it's Seattle in three. I think Dallas get one of these games to go to penalties. Yeah. And then I, for whatever reason, I like Dallas in penalties more than Seattle.
Martin Paas, I think, has a better overall penalty record than does Steph Fry. Yeah.
There you go. Thanks, Weeby.
I don't know if that means anything, but, you know, there it is.
Yeah, same. Sounders in three, same. I just think they can... This one of these games is going to finish 0-0 and go to penalty kicks. So
somebody's got to split it. So I won't be that person. I'm going to say it's Seattle Sounders in three as well.
This is the only unanimous one so far.
Cincy Red Bulls.
We're about to get to our second one.
Yeah, Cincy Red Bulls might be. Doyle, sell us here on what amounts to, I don't know, maybe a car crash?
Yeah, I mean, that's Red Bull style of soccer. We already talked about it. Like, they turn every game they play into a Red Bull style of game, and you have to be willing to go all out to win every 50-50, 30-70, right? Like, that's the whole blueprint is Red Bulls turn, like, they treat 30-70s like 50-50s, and they treat 50-50s like it's their damn ball. And if you're not ready to match that, then just look at what happened to Charlotte. Since they are a much better team than Charlotte are, they defend well in moments of transition where the midfield has lost possession. Since he defends really well, a big chunk of that is Naboto. He's been fantastic this year, but the center backs have also been very good, and that allows them, of course, to throw both fullback or wing backs forward. It's a really good team. It feels like they're built to survive these types of games where it's about changes in possession and then final third quality, because when you have Noboto as the centerpiece of those changes in possession and you have Lucho and Vasquez and Bupenza, who is back, by the way, Pat Noonan said today there's no suspension or anything.
I was going to read the quote.
Go ahead.
Laurel Failer put out, Aaron's good to go. We handled the conversations internally. I think they were very productive. And as you saw, he's out with the group and we're looking for him to help our team in preparation. So he should be fully involved.
It all on paper looks like this should be Cincy's series. Like, they're just built to survive it. I got a weird feeling about it though. Like, I haven't loved what I've seen from Cincy over the past month or so.
I like that they had the Open Cup experience of sort of playing in that big high intensity win or go home moment, and they tripped, but then they woke up in that second half in the semifinal. Yeah. It's also they beat Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena last year in the playoffs. So the little playoff experience a lot of these players have is specifically against this opponent. Yeah, if Elias Manoel is going to put away chances that all combine to 0.1 XG three times, then like things will happen. But I think in general, this is a Cincy team that has shown that they have multiple ways to sort of come back when the game's against them, right? Lucho is their leader. We know Brandon Vasquez can control parts of the game off him, especially if Bupenza's playing. He can drop in a little bit and sort of find more of the ball if he's struggling to beat Reyes and Nealis in duels in 50-50s. And so then you've got Barrial, who can open up space, where I would say Kyle Duncan's probably the weakest part of this Red Bull team. So I think there's different options. There's different ability for this Cincy team to play. And it feels like now they've kind of been there. So I get what you're saying of like, and I think we all said on the show last week, if you're Cincy, you didn't want Red Bulls. You don't want them in the first round. There's no positive to this experience for you coming out of it. It's not going to be easy. It doesn't set you up to then figure out how you're going to play. Well, if they play Philly in the next round, I guess maybe you're in it.
It's not like a feel good like reward.
Yeah. No, it's you're going to have to expend so much energy against this team. I remember I called that Cincy Red Bull game last year, and you mentioned Barrial because I think he's going to be the most important player in this series, because in that second goal, the way it all went was Red Bull had one of their just like go as direct as possible. They lose the ball before getting to the 18, pop it out to Barrial, and he just flew down the left side, found Vasquez for the goal. And I feel like that's going to happen multiple times in this series where he's going to be able to just outrun the midfield of the Red Bulls and create an opportunity on the counter or whatever it may be. Cincinnati's more built this year, obviously this year, to combat that Red Bull system than they were last year. And last year, they still got the win in that playoff.
And to think about it, like we saw those same chances. Charlotte had those chances. If it's Bupenza or Vasquez. Yeah. No, it's a good
or Lucho. Or Lucho, you know, yeah. So
also just the midfield and the center backs for Cincinnati. More comfortable, composed, better on the ball. With three center backs, you can space them out a little bit differently and step out of that back line as well.
I think last year's scrambling here for Cincy was like Red Bulls in transition. Now you've got Mascara.
Right.
Compared to, I don't know, what was it, Hagelin and Ian Murphy last year? And Miazga after 3 months? Red Bulls are going to win this thing in two games.
There's a trainer. All right, prediction. Yeah, prediction.
I'll say Cincy in three. There's a Red Bull team that's fighting a little bit. I will give the history. 2008, Red Bulls went to MLS Cup. They were the last team into the playoffs, and they knocked off the Houston Dynamo with the number one seed, and they did it pretty handily. I think in going back in Red Bull history, three greatest playoff games was that Chicago game, the Charlotte game we just saw, and the second leg against Houston in that playoff. So good luck, Red Bull fans.
I got Cincy in two. I think they win the first, go to Red Bull Arena, handle business, win the second. Just too much quality. Too much experience. I think a very, very good coach in Pat Noonan that'll have him ready to go. I think Cincy in two.
Love you, Red Bulls fans, but yeah, no, it's not going to happen. I think that they're just too much, and I think Lucho will dominate one of the games. He's just going to carry that team to a win.
I think it's Cincy in three, and the game Lucho dominates will be game two at Red Bull Arena after the Red Bulls win the first game.
Wow.
Coming in on momentum.
So these can get spicy.
Like
quick.
This one is going to be so metro because like I think the Red Bulls are going to win game one in Cincinnati and gonna go home.
Fumble two games. Yeah. Yikes.
All right. Apologies to Philly, New England.
Maximum pain,
which hits us here in 8 out of 8 positions in our personal entertainment rankings. Of course, you watch Cincy, New York on Sunday.
I didn't agree with this.
Philly and New England get things started though in the first round on Saturday, like mid afternoon, depending on your time zone, 5 p.m. Eastern. You disagreed. Why? Sell us.
I think these are two of the most even teams. And so I think the potential for it to be high stakes throughout the 90 minutes for three games is really high.
Is that where you want to be if you're Philadelphia?
No, not at all. Yeah, I don't want to say that. Right. If I'm Philly, right now, Philly doesn't feel like Philly.
No.
They feel like another team that made the playoffs and, you kind of forget about them. But that's what they've kind of been leaning towards, which is like, we don't care. We're not going to win Supporters Shield. We'll get a home series. We want to win MLS Cup. We want to be healthy then. We want to be fit then. So if that's all true and they come out and dominate game one, then it shifts that whole narrative.
Are they in the right kind of form and mindset to make a run like this? Throw?
Philly?
Yeah.
So I would say no, just based upon what we've seen of them over the course of the season. It feels like they've been hanging on by a thread. But the good part about Jose Martinez being suspended for decision day is now he's got his legs, a little bit more rest.
And he's not suspended.
And he's not suspended.
Not suspended for the game. He can't get suspended if he's already suspended.
The goal that Andre Blake gave up was uncharacteristic. They have a ton of experience now in knockout rounds over the past few years. It feels like it's all there for them. It was easier to really like their chances last year at this time going into the postseason because they were beating everybody 4-0 in the second half of the season. So I understand the skepticism, but I have a hard time getting there myself. Like, this is a Philadelphia Union, man. Like, every year they figure out a way to take a step forward. What's their step forward this year? It's one place it ends. So I'm not saying I'm betting on them, but like, I don't think they're going to fall on their faces in the first round.
Is it fair to argue? I'm talking just about star players for both of these teams. Who has more? Because Gazdag, Carranza, Kai Wagner, Jose Martinez. I know I'm missing a few, but when you add in the Revs with Carlos Gil, with Chan Kalai, who's balling right now, Gustavo Bow, and they're missing guys as well. It's a little interesting because I know that New England hasn't been playing and haven't been in great form, but when it comes down to it, there's game breakers in this team. It's kind of even, I think.
Top end, I think it's the Revs.
Yeah.
Top, if you said top three players, who do you think can make the biggest difference? Well, depth, it's depth by far, it's the Union.
Well, in the weak link game, right? How often does soccer lose high leverage stakes because the weakest link on the field is on your team? Sure. And I'd say the Revs have all of them almost. Like, if Andre Blake doesn't make a mistake like he did on decision day.
But he's made a few of those this year.
He has. Yeah, that's
made
been
a few
weird.
Of those this
okay,
year.
If Andre Blake doesn't play at that level, Philly cannot win anything. But that's the same for Heal.
Fair.
Right? Heal has to be the best player on the field. Otherwise, Revs have no chance.
Mm-hmm. Jacob Jackson in goal for the Revs?
He looked good on decision day. He looks comfortable. I think he's better with his feet.
Anders was very excited about this in the run.
It's an incredible. It truly is like an incredible narrative
arc. Is he a UCLA
guy? Turner to Georgie out in the middle of the season to God knows what, to a goalkeeper from overseas coming in.
It was to Earl Edwards, and Earl Edwards kind of lost the job. Yep. They went out and they signed Thomas Vasilík.
I didn't even know what his name was. I'd forgotten at this point.
Czech Inter 50. Appearances for Czech Republic.
50 appearances for what are you doing during Czech international games? Oh, it's
talking about the Alan Pulido clown nose on it.
A lot of experience.
You're not allowed to eat pierogies anymore.
A lot of experience in the championship as well. Like, he has a very good resume, and he's been on the bench for one game and then has not been in the match day roster, I think, the past couple.
It goes without saying that the last few months have been
strange,
very interesting in every way for the New England Revolution.
I honestly, 2 weeks ago on this show, after that Nashville game specifically, I thought the Revs had given up. And then they came back and they beat Philly on decision day, which I was a little bit surprised that they played that way. Now, in watching that game, they didn't really create a ton of danger. That's one of the other things that's odd is if you start Gustavo Bow and Chan Kalai basically as forwards, you don't really have a center forward. And Philly aren't normally going to give you a ton of soft chances. And then the two forwards in transition for Philly, again, 1v1 against Farrell and whether it's Kessler or Romney, right now with Kessler finally coming back from injury over the last few weeks, that's not an advantage to the Revs. So it seems hard to think New England's going to get through this, except Carlos Gil is the best field player in this game. Also, apologies to the Loyola Marymount Lions. He's an LMU guy, not a UCLA guy.
Need better from you on that front.
I know.
An hour and a half into this first round preview show. All right.
It's a disaster. I'm being a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, truly. What's your prediction? I've got Philly.
How many games?
Philly in two.
Two?
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
I'll take Philly in three. I just think home team's going to win each of these games.
Yeah, Philly in three.
I'll take Philly in three as well.
We have another unanimous choice there. Shout out to Tom Bogert. All right, that's it for us. First round coming up. We got a full week off here on Extra Time. What?
What?
What's the Tom thing?
Oh, he doesn't like Unanimous.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's not a big Unanimous guy. He's like, got it. He like rails against it. It's just not for him. You can watch all the matches on MLS Season Pass. And if you were sitting here thinking, these dummies, how could they predict that? That is wrong. I would get all of these right. MLS Bracket Challenge.
Do it.
Does not lock until the first game starts on Saturday.
I'm putting mine in right now.
There you go.
Do it.
I did it while we were on the show.
We'll see you next Friday, everybody. Enjoy the first round of the MLS Cup playoffs. Adios.